3. Almost at the same time, and certainly on the same day, the interview at last took place between Stepan Trofimovitch and Varvara Petrovna. She had long had this meeting in her mind, and had sent word about it to her former friend, but for some reason she had kept putting it off till then. It took place at Skvoreshniki. Varvara Petrovna arrived at her country house all in a bustle. It had been definitely decided the evening before that the fete was to take place at the Marshal's, but Varvara Petrovna's rapid brain at once grasped that no one could prevent her from afterwards giving her own special entertainment at Skvoreshniki, and again assembling the whole town. Then everyone could see for themselves whose house was best, and in which more taste was displayed in receiving guests and giving a ball. Altogether she was hardly to be recognised. She seemed completely transformed, and instead of the unapproachable, noble lady, Stepan Trofimovitch's expression, seemed changed into the most commonplace, whimsical society woman. But perhaps this may only have been on the surface. When she reached the empty house, she had gone through all the rooms, accompanied by her faithful old butler, Alexei Yegorych, and by Formushka, a man who had seen much of life and was a specialist in decoration. They began to consult and deliberate what furniture was to be brought from the townhouse, what things, what pictures, where they were to be put, how the conservatories and flowers could be put to the best use, where to put new curtains, where to have the refreshment rooms, whether one or two, and so on and so on. And behold, in the midst of this exciting bustle, she suddenly took it into her head to send for Stepan Trofimovitch. The latter had long before received notice of this interview, and was prepared for it, and he had every day been expecting just such a sudden summons. As he got into the carriage, he crossed himself. His fate was being decided. He found his friend in the big drawing-room on the little sofa in the recess, before a little marble table with a pencil and paper in her hands. Formushka, with a yard measure, was measuring the height of the galleries and the windows, while Varvara Petrovna herself was writing down the numbers and making notes on the margin. She nodded in Stepan Trofimovitch's direction without breaking off from what she was doing, and when the latter muttered some sort of greeting, she hurriedly gave him her hand, and without looking at him, motioned him to a seat beside her. "I sat waiting for 5 minutes, mastering my heart," he told me afterwards. "I saw before me not the woman whom I had known for 20 years. An absolute conviction that all was over gave me a strength which astounded even her. I swear that she was surprised at my stoicism in that last hour." Varvara Petrovna suddenly put down her pencil on the table and turned quickly to Stepan Trofimovitch. "Stepan Trofimovitch, we have to talk of business. I'm sure you have prepared all your fervent words and various phrases, but we'd better go straight to the point, hadn't we?" She had been in too great a hurry to show the tone she meant to take, and what might not come next. "Wait, be quiet, let me speak. Afterwards you shall, though really I don't know what you can answer me," she said in a rapid patter. "The 1,200 rubles of your pension I consider a sacred obligation to pay you as long as you live." "Though why a sacred obligation? Simply a contract. That would be a great deal more real, wouldn't it? If you like, we'll write it out. Special arrangements have been made in case of my death. But you are receiving from me at present lodging, servants, and your maintenance in addition. Reckoning that in money, it would amount to 1,500 rubles, wouldn't it? I will add another 300 rubles, making 3,000 rubles in all. Will that be enough a year for you? I think that's not too little. In any extreme emergency, I would add something more. And so, take your money, send me back my servants, and live by yourself, where you like, in Petersburg, in Moscow, abroad, or here, only not with me. Do you hear?"
"Only lately those lips dictated to me as imperatively and as suddenly very different demands," said Stepan Trofimovitch, slowly and with sorrowful distinctness. "I submitted, and danced the Cossack dance to please you. Oui, la comparaison peut être permise. C'était comme un petit Cossack du Don qui sautait sur la propre tombe. Now,
stop, Stepan Trofimovitch. You are horribly long-winded. You didn't dance, but came to see me in a new tie, new linen, gloves, scented and pomatumed. I assure you that you were very anxious to get married yourself. It was written on your face, and I assure you a most unseemly expression it was. If I did not mention it to you at the time, it was simply out of delicacy. But you wished it. You wanted to be married, in spite of the abominable things you wrote about me and your betrothed. Now it is very different. And what has the Cossack du Don to do with it? And what tomb do you mean? I don't understand the comparison. On the contrary, you have only to live. Live as long as you can. I shall be delighted.
In an almshouse?
In an almshouse? People don't go into almshouses with 3,000 rubles a year. Ah, I remember, she laughed. Pyotr Stepanovitch did joke about an almshouse once. Bah, there certainly is a special almshouse which is worth considering. It's for persons who are highly respectable. There are colonels there, and there's positively one general who wants to get into it. If you went into it with all your money, you would find peace, comfort, servants to wait on you. There you could occupy yourself with study, and could always make up a party for cards.
Passons.
Passons? Varvara Petrovna winced. But if so, that's all. You've been informed that we shall live henceforward entirely apart.
And that's all, he said. All that's left of 20 years. Our last farewell.
You're awfully fond of these exclamations, Stepan Trofimovitch. It's not at all the fashion. Nowadays people talk roughly but simply. You keep harping on our 20 years. 20 years of mutual vanity and nothing more. Every letter you've written me was written not for me but for posterity. You're a stylist and not a friend, and friendship is only a splendid word. In reality, a mutual exchange of sloppiness.
Good heavens! How many sayings not your own? Lessons learned by heart. They've already put their uniform on you, too. You, too, are rejoicing. You, too, are basking in the sunshine. Share, share, for what a mess of pottage you have sold them your freedom.
I'm not a parrot to repeat other people's phrases, cried Varvara Petrovna, boiling over. You may be sure I have stored up many sayings of my own. What have you been doing for me all these 20 years? You refused me even the books I ordered for you, though, except for the binder, they would have remained uncut. What did you give me to read when I asked you during those first years to be my guide? Always Capfig, and nothing but Capfig. You were jealous of my culture, even, and took measures. And all the while, everyone's laughing at you. I must confess I always considered you only as a critic. You are a literary critic and nothing more. When on the way to Petersburg I told you that I meant to found a journal and to devote my whole life to it, you looked at me ironically at once and suddenly became horribly supercilious.
That was not that. Not that. We were afraid then of persecution.
It was just that. And you couldn't have been afraid of persecution in Petersburg at that time. Do you remember in February, too, when the news of the emancipation came? You ran to me in a panic and demanded that I should at once give you a written statement that the proposed magazine had nothing to do with you, that the young people had been coming to see me and not you, that you were only a tutor who lived in the house only because he had not yet received his salary. Isn't that so? Do remember that. You have distinguished yourself all your life, Stepan Trofimovitch.
That was only a moment of weakness, a moment when we were alone, he exclaimed mournfully. But is it possible to break off everything for the sake of such petty impressions? Can it be that nothing more has been left between us after these long years?
You are horribly calculating. You keep trying to leave me in your debt. When you came back from abroad, you looked down upon me and wouldn't let me utter a word. But when I came back myself and talked to you afterwards of my impressions of the Madonna, you wouldn't hear me. You began smiling condescendingly into your cravat, as though I were incapable of the same feelings as you.
It was not so. It was probably not so. J'ai oublié.
No, it was so, she answered. And what's more, you've nothing to pride yourself on. That's all nonsense, and one of your fancies. Now there's no one, absolutely no one, in ecstasies over the Madonna. No one wastes time over it, except old men who are hopelessly out of date. That's established.
Established, is it?
It's of no use whatever. This jug's of use, because one can pour water into it. This pencil's of use, because you can write anything with it. But that woman's face is inferior to any face in nature. Try drawing an apple, and put a real apple beside it. Which would you take? You wouldn't make a mistake, I'm sure. This is what all our theories amount to, now that the first light of free investigation has dawned upon them.
Indeed. Indeed.
You laugh ironically. And what used you to say to me about charity? Yet the enjoyment derived from charity is a haughty and immoral enjoyment. The rich man's enjoyment in his wealth, his power, and in the comparison of his importance with the poor. Charity corrupts giver and taker alike, and, what's more, does not attain its object, as it only increases poverty. Fathers who don't want to work crowd round the charitable like gamblers round the gambling table, hoping for gain, while the pitiful farthings that are flung them are 100 times too little. Have you given away much in your life? Less than a ruble, if you try and think. Try to remember when last you gave away anything. It'll be 2 years ago, maybe 4. You make an outcry and only hinder things. Charity ought to be forbidden by law, even in the present state of society. In the new regime, there will be no poor at all.
Oh, what an eruption of borrowed phrases! So it's come to the new regime already. Unhappy woman, God help you.
Yes, it has, Stepan Trofimovitch. You carefully concealed all these new ideas from me, though everyone's familiar with them nowadays, and you did it simply out of jealousy, so as to have power over me, so that now even that Yulia is 100 miles ahead of me. But now my eyes have been opened. I have defended you, Stepan Trofimovitch, all I could, but there is no one who does not blame you.
Enough, said he, getting up from his seat. Enough. And what can I wish you now, unless it's repentance?
Sit still a minute, Stepan Trofimovitch. I have another question to ask you. You've been told of the invitation to read at the literary matinee. It was arranged through me. Tell me what you're going to read.
Why, about that very Queen of Queens, that ideal of humanity, the Sistine Madonna, who, to your thinking, is inferior to a glass or a pencil.
So you're not taking something historical, said Varvara Petrovna in mournful surprise. But they won't listen to you. You've got that Madonna on your brain. You seem bent on putting everyone to sleep. Let me assure you, Stepan Trofimovitch, I am speaking entirely in your own interest. It would be a different matter if you would take some short but interesting story of medieval court life from Spanish history, or, better still, some anecdote, and pad it out with other anecdotes and witty phrases of your own. There were magnificent courts then. Ladies, you know, poisonings. Karamazinov says it would be strange if you couldn't read something interesting from Spanish history.
Karamazinov, that fool who has written himself out. Looking for a subject for me.
Karamazinov, that almost imperial intellect. You are too free in your language, Stepan Trofimovitch.
Your Karamazinov is a spiteful old woman whose day is over. Cher, Cher, how long have you been so enslaved by them? Oh, God!
I can't endure him even now for the airs he gives himself, but I do justice to his intellect. I repeat, I have done my best to defend you as far as I could. And why do you insist on being absurd and tedious? On the contrary, come on to the platform with a dignified smile as the representative of the last generation, and tell them two or three anecdotes in your witty way, as only you can tell things sometimes. Though you may be an old man now, though you may belong to a past age, though you may have dropped behind them, in fact, yet you'll recognize it yourself with a smile in your preface, and all will see that you're an amiable, good-natured, witty relic. In brief, a man of the old savour, and so far advanced as to be capable of appreciating at their value all the absurdities of certain ideas which you have hitherto followed. Come, as a favour to me, I beg you.
Share. Enough. Don't ask me. I can't. I shall speak of the Madonna, but I shall raise a storm that will either crush them or shatter me alone.
It will certainly be you alone, Stepan Trofimovitch.
Such is my fate. I will speak of the contemptible slave, of the stinking, depraved flunky who will first climb a ladder with scissors in his hands and slash to pieces the divine image of the great ideal in the name of equality, envy, and digestion. Let my curse thunder out upon them, and then... Then...
The madhouse?
Perhaps. But in any case, whether I shall be left vanquished or victorious, that very evening I shall take my bag, my beggar's bag. I shall leave all my goods and chattels, all your presents, all your pensions and promises of future benefits, and go forth on foot to end my life a tutor in a merchant's family, or to die somewhere of hunger in a ditch. I have said it. Alea jacta est.
He got up again. I've been convinced for years, said Varvara Petrovna, getting up with flashing eyes, that your only object in life is to put me and my house to shame by your calumnies. What do you mean by being a tutor in a merchant's family or dying in a ditch? It's spite, calumny, and nothing more.
You have always despised me. But I will end like a knight, faithful to my lady. Your good opinion has always been dearer to me than anything. From this moment I will take nothing, but will worship you disinterestedly.
How stupid that is!
You have never respected me. I may have a mass of weaknesses. Yes, I have sponged on you. I speak the language of nihilism. But sponging has never been the guiding motive of my action. It has happened so of itself. I don't know how. I always imagined there was something higher than meat and drink between us, and I've never, never been a scoundrel. And so, to take the open road, to set things right, I set off late, late autumn out of doors. The mist lies over the fields. The hoarfrost of old age covers the road before me, and the wind howls about the approaching grave. But so forward, forward on my new way. Filled with purest love and fervour, faith which my sweet dream did yield. Oh, my dreams, farewell. 20 years. Alea jacta est.
His face was wet with a sudden gush of tears. He took his hat. "I don't understand Latin," said Varvara Petrovna, doing her best to control herself. Who knows? Perhaps she, too, felt like crying, but caprice and indignation once more got the upper hand. "I know only one thing, that all this is childish nonsense. You will never be capable of carrying out your threats, which are a mass of egoism. You will set off nowhere, to no merchant. You'll end up very peaceably on my hands taking your pension and receiving your utterly impossible friends on Tuesdays. Goodbye, Stepan Trofimovitch.
Alea jacta est."
He made her a deep bow and returned home, almost dead with emotion.